This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Tonight, Hillary Clinton takes the stage at the Democratic National Convention to accept her party's historic nomination as the first woman to head a major political party's ticket for president. Both she and her Republican opponent have historically low approval ratings, and she has been the subject of repeated investigations and innuendo over the course of her political life, none of which has led to much, but questions seem to linger. The convention in Philadelphia had a rocky start, with Bernie Sanders supporters clinging to their choice, even booing their own candidate when he threw his support to Clinton. But unlike the Republican convention, the Democrats trotted out the stars of their party and seemed to slowly quiet the dissension over the ultimate nominee. Michelle Obama led the way with what has been called a remarkable speech. Cory Booker distinguished himself. Former President Bill Clinton found himself in a role reversal. President Obama came to the stage last night to put the finishing touches on the star parade with a speech that has been touted as the best political speech in history. If that can be said, I'm not sure it can, but that's what some pundits said last night. And tonight, Hillary herself accepts the nomination and tries to cap off this week's convention, which has painted a more positive view of America. But will it work? What message have viewers taken away from this? Will Hillary get a convention bump high enough to overcome the bump Trump received last week? To talk about that and more, we are joined by political scientists Dr. Michael Bitzer and Dr. Susan Roberts. Michael Bitzer is also provost of Catawba College, and Susan Roberts is at Davidson College. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Be here.
Good morning. They are in our Spirit Square studio. We're joined by phone from Philadelphia by the Charlotte Observer's Tim Funk, who is covering the Democratic Convention for the newspaper. And with us by phone, also from the city of brotherly love, is Aisha Dew, a Bernie Sanders delegate, former director of Sanders' North Carolina campaign, and former Mecklenburg County Democratic Party chair. Good morning to you both.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. You all sound asleep in Philadelphia. the Philadelphia contingent's asleep.
Yes, yeah. Binge watching.
Late night here, yeah.
So Donald Trump promised a star-studded convention last week, but it was the Democrats who delivered, aside from the stars of the party, which have been many over the last several nights, Sarah Silverman, Meryl Streep, Alicia Keys, Paul Simon, Eva Longoria, Demi Lovato, Boys to Men, to name just a few. Is that difference typical of the two conventions?
Well, I think, you know, maybe I don't watch enough television to, really recognize the stars at the Republican National Convention, but I think they've always had the Democrats somewhat of a corner on the Hollywood vote. But I think the Democrats had many more people, many more stars that were more effective communicators, recognized, and gave a good message. I mean, they really were. I mean, Susan Sarandon was not. I think she was a Bernie supporter. Mm-hmm. But even she looked like she was on board the bus. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really nice. The star power was effective. And the music is good, but what do I know?
Plus, the Democratic Party. I mean, a lot of the Republican luminaries stayed away from the convention, including the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who ran for president. But the Democrats seem to have a lineup of political stars that, at least in the Democratic universe, are big stars. Joe Biden is loved by Democrats, and he was there last night and just enthralled them.
Along with Bill Clinton. So, I mean, you know, it was a stark contrast between what we didn't see last week at the RNC, and particularly the former presidents, the major leaders of the Republican Party either stayed away or showed up and then left. And here we've got basically the big league, the top stars within the Democratic Party.
And I think more importantly, or as important, these stars and the politicians translate into surrogates. Yeah. Trump will not have the surrogates. She's got a wealth of surrogates, star surrogates, political surrogates, and they will hit the road. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can say the same thing about what Trump can do with a light stable of Republican elites. I just don't think they're going to show up. And, I mean, as you said, McCrory stayed home. Is he going to stump or be a surrogate for Donald Trump?
Well,
he was with Donald Trump
at Winston-Salem this week. Tim Funk, we're watching it on television. You're in Philadelphia as a reporting on this convention. What's your take on all of this?
Well, I think she's they've been building up to her all week, so she's got to deliver tonight. I think what they've been trying to do here on the ground is, and especially on TV, I guess, is telling people, well, Hillary Clinton's been in the spotlight since 1992. you thought you knew her, but really, here's what she's really like behind the scenes. She was in the room with President Obama when he made all those tough decisions. She's been committed to children her whole life. She's really a nice person, U.S. Senator. She went to bat for New York. I think it's really been a buildup to the speech tonight, and she's not the natural speaker or politician that President Obama or her own husband is. So,
or Joe Biden, for that matter, or Cory Booker. Biden, yeah. I mean, there have been some remarkable speakers, whether you believe in their politics, there have been remarkably talented orators at this convention, and she is not one of them.
I think what they're trying to do is sort of, President Obama, I think, is trying to fire up his coalition that, you know, delivered the vote for him twice. He even said last night, I want you to do for Hillary Clinton what you did for me. And then they bring in Joe Biden, who has a real connection with blue-collar workers. They even had Michael Bloomberg, the former Republican mayor of New York, who's now an independent, who's speaking at a Democratic convention, and he really did it. He really ripped into his fellow billionaire businessman, Trump, and talked about her as the experienced, obvious choice.
I want to talk about Bloomberg a little bit later on in the program, and I also want to talk to Aisha. But before we do that, despite all of the bona fides that they have been touting about her political career, all these Democrats, over and over and over and over, and talking about what a wonderful human being she is, still lingering over all of this and eagerly brought up by her opponents and people in the other party, are these concerns about emails and the charge of recklessness by the FBI director about her use of a personal server at home. Can she overcome that?
Well, I think Trump gave her something to work with. I think that will eclipse a lot of the concern, because now the focus is on what you said about perhaps encouraging Russia to have a cyber attack. And I think now that's something that's created the controversy, is capturing the attention and the conversation. I don't think it will go away. And I think that, you know, we're not going to hear the Bernie Sanders clip, I'm tired of your emails, your emails are fine. But I think this did a little something to distract from the email problem.
It's fascinating to me that from a strategy point of view, you always want to have the negatives of your opponent drive the news cycle. Mm-hmm. And what Donald Trump has managed to do is to step on that attempt to drive the negatives of Hillary Clinton.
Is that
and
because
become the story himself is that in a negative light?
Is that because he is politically inexperienced, or is it because he's just not bright?
Well, can I say both, all of the above?
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Because some of the blunders that he have been making is because he speaks before he thinks, seems to me.
But that's what a lot of his supporters like. Yeah, they like that kind of plain talk.
Well, it's fun. It's really fun on television. It's been marvelously entertaining.
Should we expect anything else?
But does it not concern these people that this is that kind of behavior in the Oval Office is? You want to talk about reckless?
It certainly worries some of the Republicans. Even his running mate, Mike Pence, put out a statement that seemed to say, "Don't really listen to Donald. We're not in bed with the Russians, and we'll deal with them." And then House Speaker Paul Ryan put out a pretty stern message, calling Putin a thug and stay out of our election. So you've got, I think Donald Trump wanted to sort of, you know, distract from the Democratic message, but he ended up making himself the issue, like Susan said.
So, Aisha, both parties have somehow nominated two of the most unpopular candidates in recent memory, and this week it was revealed that the Democratic Party helped in that effort, with the Democratic National Committee emails being released by WikiLeaks indicating that the party favored Hillary. They had their thumb on the scale toward her. It led to the immediate resignation by Debbie Wasserman Schultz as chair of both the DNC and of the convention itself. You are a Sanders delegate. You were the North Carolina campaign manager for the Bernie Sanders campaign. How does this sit with his supporters?
I can tell you that it really doesn't sit well with a lot of supporters. There were rumors and concerns all along that there were issues with the Democratic Party, and of course, they were absolutely confirmed this week. I think that the positive thing for supporters who might get on board and who are willing to get on board is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz did step down right away. And I think that people are really excited about about Donna Brazile and also about Representative Marsha Fudge. So people are looking towards the future, and the fact that this actually was uncovered and it came out and it played itself out will probably bode well for those who are Sanders supporters to come on board and support Secretary Clinton.
So as a Democrat first and a Sanders person second, how would you describe the level of help those emails indicate he was given by the DNC? And do you think that was simply a DNC decision, or did Hillary's campaign have something to do with it?
You know, I really don't know. But, of course, there are a lot of people who know each other, so I'm not quite sure how integrated they were, but we're in a place now where we can move forward.
This convention also started with some contention in the ranks. Bernie Sanders supporters were rightfully proud, I suppose, of their revolution and the way they were able to push their candidate to the fore and the influence they were able to exert over the party platform. They are not happy with the outcome. And on Monday, they booed many times. They, after many speeches on Monday and on Tuesday and on Wednesday, reporters from television networks talked to Bernie Sanders candidates. And they still aren't supporting Hillary Clinton. And at least one of them told one reporter that she was going to vote for the Green Party. Now, what, if anything, Aisha, as a Sanders campaign person, are you doing to get your people on board, or are you?
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, I have to say that this was the little engine that could political revolution. We didn't know that we were going to make it to. No one knew that Senator Sanders would be able to stay in the race as long as he could, starting at the beginning of this process. So, the reason that we made it as far as we did is because we had amazing, amazing volunteers who really pulled out a very strong grassroots effort that was different from Barack Obama in 2008, but still. We had a tremendous amount of volunteers. So
but are you acting as a kind of whip to get your delegates into shape and to get them to support the nominee, or are you letting them do whatever they think they should do?
Well, this is democracy, and this is what democracy looks like, right? So we pulled in people who were independents, Republicans, and Green Party before into this process, and so some of them are new Democrats. So I think that there's a delicate balance between allowing people to grieve and then also pulling them along so that they support the Democratic nominee. You know me, I'm a former Democratic Party chair. I want them to support the nominee so that we can defeat Trump. Yeah. So it's a delicate balance because people need time. They were empowered to lead, and now they need to also be given the space to grieve and then come along as they will.
Susan Roberts.
Well, I think to be succinct, and I would agree to Aisha, a revolution is not stopped by a roll call vote. And I think that people thought that might be kind of a healing moment. People said 90% of Bernie's ideas and goals were in some way woven into the platform. But I think it is a new cohort, and I'm sure it's a cohort that might go along with Clinton, given the choices, but they really are not the cohort that votes or turns out as a rule.
But isn't this what always happens at a political convention? There's always a winner, and there are always losers, and there are always supporters who are disappointed. When we come back, I want to get an answer to that question, because it seems, at least with this regard, with the Cruz supporters and the Republican side and the Sanders supporters here, that it's much stronger. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Novant Health Cancer Care, providing customized treatment plans to help give patients the support they need. Information available at novanthealth.org/cancer. On the local news roundup tomorrow on this program, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump play the VFW convention in Charlotte to very different receptions. Meanwhile, the Democratic convention takes place in Philadelphia, what Clinton's nomination means for North Carolina voters. Charles Jeter resigns from the North Carolina House. We'll talk about possible reasons why and get an update on the Whitewater Center, including what happens to the water in it. All with our roundtable of reporters on this program tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, updates from day three of the Democratic National Convention. President Obama and Vice President Biden making their case for Hillary Clinton, and Clinton's running mate, Senator Tim Kaine, debuts on the national stage.
That's the Diane Rehm Show following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We are, as we did last week during the Thursday program, we talked about the Republican National Convention. Today we're talking about the Democratic National Convention with Dr. Michael Bitzer, Professor of Political Science and Provost at Catawba College, Dr. Susan Roberts, Professor of Political Science at Davidson College, Tim Funk, reporter for the Charlotte Observer from Philadelphia right now, and Aisha Du, a North Carolina Sanders delegate, former director of the Sanders campaign and former chair of the Democratic Party here in Mecklenburg County. It seems that at the Republican convention, the Cruz delegates were, although they finally got on board, at least from what we saw on television, they were very reluctant to get on board with Donald Trump. And the same is true with Bernie Sanders delegates here. It seems much stronger than in years past, is it?
Well, parties are certainly made up of coalitions. And whenever you go through the most contested part of being the leader of that party, and that's the presidential nominee, you're going to have that division naturally going on. What I thought was interesting was compare Cruz's speech on Wednesday night of last week to Bernie Sanders, who was on Monday night of this week. Cruz basically said, vote your conscience, as in, you don't have to vote for Donald Trump. That elicited boos from the stadium and the convention hall. Bernie Sanders basically kind of came out and said, I am supporting Hillary Clinton.
He got booed
as well. So there is this passion that somebody like Bernie Sanders, like Ted Cruz, like others can bring into a party. But once they tap into it, you have to be careful about how that energy gets played out.
Tim Funk, you were there on Monday. Bernie Sanders got booed at one of his own meetings, not on the convention floor, when he threw his support to Hillary. Every time Hillary's name was mentioned, it seemed like on Monday night, there were boos from the crowd. Even last night when Leon Panetta spoke, and here's the guy who helped get Osama bin Laden. When he talked about that, he was booed by a certain number of delegates who were anti-war delegates, who wanted people to they were sending the message, let's get out of these wars. What did that feel like on the floor? I mean, that just seems to me they're not whipping the convention into shape.
Well, you know, I was talking up here in Philadelphia with a young politician from another state who is a Sanders delegate, and he explained to me there are Bernie people and there are message people. And the Bernie people, have a little more experience in politics like Aisha, and they are going with the senator. They are going to be on board. They don't necessarily like to even mention Hillary Clinton by name, but they're going to support the candidate or the nominee. And then you have the message people who are newbies and new to electoral politics. They're more comfortable with protest and process. So last night and the night before, they basically stormed the media tents with signs and chanting, and Danny Glover was with them. And they wore adhesive tape over their mouths to show that they've been silenced by the DNC and the Clinton campaign.
And yet one of them did an interview with the adhesive tape over their mouth. And it was recommended by a comedian that they should take the tape off if they're going to do an interview.
It reminds me of the 1960s. I mean, when Eugene McCarthy delegates didn't want to go with Hubert Humphrey. But I think in the end, I think the Bernie people understand they don't want to end up with President Trump. So In the end, I think a lot of them will vote for him, but some will vote for Jill Stein, and some will go with libertarians, and some will stay home. But I think it will be probably 90% who eventually go with Hillary.
Aisha, I was going to come to you anyway, so let me ask you the question, because last week, I want to be fair about this, I raised the question that if Republicans are so frightened of and critical of their nominee, but they're supporting their nominee, that's party over country. Is that patriotic? So let me ask you, as a Sanders delegate and as someone who has said there is nothing Hillary Clinton can say to win some of these Bernie Sanders voters over, if you're going to support Hillary Clinton, that's putting party before country. Is that patriotic? If you don't believe she's the person, why support her?
Well, I mean, let's just be clear. We have the most progressive platform that we've ever had. And one of the positive aspects of this whole process has been that we had people actually paying attention to the party platform and what we're going to do for our country. And I will say that a lot of Bernie people are issue-based people, as they're issue-based people. So I think that's why 90% of them are going to come along, because at the end of the day, the policies are better for the country than Donald Trump's policies. And I'm not quite sure what they are, but they're better.
Hillary Clinton is hated by the right. I mean, vitriolically hated by the right. And there are a lot of Sanders people who don't like her. And as you said, they won't even say her name. What is it for Democrats about Hillary that makes them not embrace her?
Well, I think some of it is the problem of trustworthiness, and that has become the factor. The two least liked candidates in American history.
Aside from the emails. What makes her untrustworthy in their minds?
Well, I think it's that perhaps, and they've accused her of flip-flopping from time to time, which has now become the death knell to a
politician.
Yes,
but Donald Trump flip-flops every day.
Well, people don't have the expectations of – he's really lowered the bar. People say, well, that's just Donald Trump. And I think that for Hillary Clinton, the lack of trust – some people say it's in her record. Some people just don't like who she is or who they perceive that she is. And I think there might be, and I'm going out on a limb to say this, I think there might be a latent sexism in saying, I don't like Hillary Clinton. She's a woman. She's gotten things her way. She's been first lady. Look at her.
There's an undercurrent of racism. There has been an undercurrent of racism for the last 8 years because people resent a black man being in the White House. If she wins this election, are we going to experience at least 4 years of sexism?
I hate to say it, but it will be there. It will be underlying. It will be undergirding some people's beliefs. And it is, again, a reflection of how society is changing. And there is a group within American society that cannot stand this kind of transformation in our society. When you hear people like Donald Trump say, make America great again, what time period is he referring to? Where does he want to go back to? When was America great? And that is the change that is going on in our society, just scares some people to death, and they can't handle it. And that's the natural, I think, reaction, viscerally, however you want to define it, that's what's going on.
Well, I think we saw that demographics are destiny is what they said about President Obama.
Yep.
Demographics and diversity are important, and some people are threatened by the fact that by 2040, 2050, we will be a majority-minority nation. And I think also, we have to look at, is it easier to ignite fear than to inspire hope? And I think that's the bottom line. I'm not sure I know what the answer is.
Tim.
You know, Mike, I think there is a bit of a double standard for women candidates, including Hillary Clinton. You notice when she raises her voice, people say, oh, she's yelling, and, you know, it's really unpleasant. But, you know, Donald Trump yells all the time, and even other politicians do. On the other hand, I think Hillary Clinton has been has used a lot of language that makes her sound like a politician, a canned politician, like she's reading something and she doesn't really necessarily believe it. In all cases, she's sort of checking her boxes. And I think if you talk to people who actually know her and are with her behind the scenes, they say she's a very different person one-on-one.
Which is the picture they've been trying to paint this week at this convention.
Yeah, I think her challenge tonight is to come across that way to America, to have a conversation rather than give some speech where she just sounds like she's, you know, from another time, a sort of machine politician.
Right. Aisha, given the convictions of the Bernie Sanders delegates, and they're strong and they're idealistic and they've been very successful in getting their candidate as far as they got him and in influencing the Democratic Party platform this time. It's the most – as the Republican platform is the most conservative in recent memory, this is the most progressive in recent memory. Yet Bernie Sanders himself, who held on with his fingernails for as long as he could – gave a full-throated endorsement to Hillary Clinton at that convention on Monday night. How did he make the transition, yet his delegates cannot?
You know, I mean, they're just really, really invested. And I think that, you know, remember that a lot of them are very new to this process. So they paid attention before, but at the end of the day, they came to a convention that they somewhat felt was perhaps persuadable. And so they had to, you know, accept that this is where we are now, because it's been a while since we've had this. But I just want to also say that although it didn't look the same, you know, Hillary Clinton's delegates held on when Barack Obama became the nominee, right? So we spent time after the convention still bringing Hillary supporters along for Barack Obama, and we managed to do so to a great extent.
But Hillary took it a step further, because Hillary called for Barack Obama's nomination to be by acclamation at the convention, and it was. Bernie called for a roll call vote. Did he do that to extend the campaign, or did he do that so that his voice could be the one that pushed pushed Hillary Clinton over the top in the roll call, which they let him do?
I think it was to allow all of the delegates who showed up for this process to be invested in the process. So yeah. Allow their states to call their vote, because hopefully then they'll come back, and that his voice would also be the one to call for her.
A really smart strategic move to let those voices be heard, to let those votes be counted, to show the delegates that, yes, your votes do matter. We are going to count every one of them. Generally, in the roll call, once the nominee hits that magic number, mm-hmm. it's basically declared. You know, the balloons drop, everything kind of goes confetti-wise. I mean, it was a celebration. They went through the entire states, and then at the end, as the punctuation exclamation point, it was Bernie Sanders who made the motion to move her nomination by acclamation. And I think that's again, I mean, somebody talked about the kind of cathartic release that's needed to kind of get through mm-hmm. this investment that you have made, blood, sweat, and tears. I think that was part of it. It was a good strategy.
Dennis emails, considering the rancor around both parties' conventions and their nominating procedures, do your guests think that this is the time for another political party, or maybe two or three?
Not yet. I think you really have to, in the past, when you say you're going to vote for a third party, you really have to acknowledge that you and your party are not going to win an election. And I think there's enough disenchantment. These things take time.
But you can be a spoiler.
You can be a spoiler.
Sure.
And I think with the Bernie Sanders supporters, you can't get things done if you don't get elected. And I think there was enough of a kind of energy that they could get him to be the candidate. But what would the contrast be between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump? That's a scenario I don't know how it would play out. But I think that Sanders spoke to a different constituency this time around. He, you know, the women that were on board, babes for Bernie, as they call themselves, were not the women that Hillary Clinton was attracting. These are women that, for feminism, that's not an active living word. That's something that happened in the past. And so to look at these constituencies, and there used to be a woman's party a long time ago, I think that they really, looking at a third party, the system is ripe. There is dysfunction, but will a third party come about because of the disintegration, most people would say, of the Republican Party and not the Democratic Party?
Let's talk about some of the speeches and some of the speakers, because they have trotted out the stars. And Michelle Obama gave an original speech. Let me just say that. I have to get that off my chest, although you'll hear it again 4 years from now at the other convention. Michelle Obama gave an original speech, and without naming him, she made the Democrats' case against the GOP nominee. Is that the usual job for the outgoing first lady at these conventions?
No, but I think the Obamas sort of owe the Clintons. You know, remember 4 years ago in Charlotte, Bill Clinton made the case for Obama's second term better than Obama did. They even called him Clinton the explainer in chief. So I think Michelle Obama and Barack Obama last night basically made the case for Hillary Clinton. And I think Michelle Obama surprised some people how political she was, but also how good she was. Some people are even talking about her now as a candidate for president. So, and I think she also was the the turning point. I think that when she got up there, the sort of rancor of the first day kind of quieted and people got on board. She almost shushed them, you know, like, this is, the stakes are big here. We've got a President Trump. Let's get on board. And I just think, you know, they're returning the favor to the Clintons, because I think Bill Clinton helped Barack Obama a lot four years ago.
Susan Roberts.
Well, I think in addition, it may be an asterisk to the convention. I was really impressed by what I call the snapshot speeches, the mother of her son that was murdered in Orlando, lots of talk about gun violence, the young man who talked about his disability and how Hillary Clinton had followed him. These were short and very inspirational, and they usually talked about what Hillary Clinton has done. They didn't get all the headlines, but in watching, I found some of them very compelling.
I've been on the
As far as Michelle Obama's concerned, I think that she's one of the few speeches where everyone stayed on their feet the entire time. They didn't do the same for President Clinton or for Barack Obama. They stayed on their feet for Michelle Obama. So she plays an integral role in this process as the African-American female vote across the country has increased with all of these elections. So her voice was definitely critical in this process to bring people along.
Did she have an impact on Bernie supporters? Was she giving them a wake-up call?
I think so. I mean, President Obama absolutely did the same thing. There are people who listened to the Obamas and the party that needed to hear directly from them.
What was the reaction of the Bernie Sanders people to Sarah Silverman's put down where she said, "You're just being ridiculous"?
I think that there was probably a mixed reaction that night. The majority of the people, I think, started to come along, and they're maybe two delegations who were perhaps upset about that. But, mixed reaction.
Okay. Among the things that Michelle Obama mentioned was the fact that she wakes up every morning in a house built by slaves and that her daughters play on the front lawn of that house with their dog. And since then, Fox News's Bill O'Reilly has said that those slaves well-fed and had decent accommodations, and that, in fact, they weren't the only labor involved in building the White House. Why did he make that comment, and does that play well with African-Americans around the country?
It doesn't. I mean, you know, let's recognize our history. Let's stop saying that slavery was so far away. And the fact that we now have African-Americans in the White House and it was a house built by slaves, let's acknowledge it. And let's just say that that's a part of our history and acknowledge how far we've come.
Well, in paraphrasing, Rush Limbaugh said something along the lines of looking back and thinking about slavery, it was kind of like Michelle needs to get on with it. It's like he said, a husband cheating and having an affair. You just have to get beyond it, which I think is startling to make a comparison to marital infidelity and slavery.
We can remember the Alamo and other aspects of history, but not slavery.
That's
okay.
Right.
Well, all right, we have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment because there's plenty to talk about, and there's certainly a lot of speeches to talk about because the speechifying has been relatively remarkable in terms of what's being said, how it's being said, and who is saying it. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. Blood donations historically decrease in the summer. Local businesses, churches, and organizations can host community blood drives to support local patients. cbcc.us. Well, our update on the goings-on in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention continue in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Reeb Show. Updates from day 3 of the convention, President Obama, Vice President Biden making their case for Hillary Clinton, and the Clinton running mate, Senator Tim Kaine, debuting on the national stage, all of which happened, of course, last night. We've been talking about that, and Diane Reeb and her guest, or whoever the host happens to be today, will be talking about that as well, coming up in 20 minutes. And if you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks.
This week on Morning Edition, history in the making at the Democratic National Convention.
And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be President of the United States.
Plus, the lingering impact of email leaks on the Democratic Party. Listen to Morning Edition every weekday morning.
Morning Edition from 5 until 9 on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. We talked about the Republican Convention this last Thursday. Tim Funk is in Philadelphia for the Charlotte Observer, joining us by phone. Ayesha Dew is in Philadelphia as a delegate to the convention. She also is on the phone, obviously. Dr. Michael Bitzer and Dr. Susan Roberts are here from Catawba College and Davidson College, where they're both political scientists. Just as there was with Barack Obama's nomination 8 years ago as the first African-American to win a major party's a nomination. There is history here as well, being the first woman to get the nomination. Is that enough? Is history, because there was enough, there was a lot of, I think, undercurrent of let's put this man in the White House because we can solve a lot of problems by putting the first African-American man in the White House. Is there a similar undercurrent to this that might be helpful to Hillary Clinton?
Well, I'd have to say yes, and I think the video of all the male presidents, and then I thought because we use the term glass ceiling all the time, and I think if you think of it as this, she broke the glass ceiling, but I would just, and this is original with me, and it's trite. There's still a lot of shards of that glass that are not going to get women everywhere. One African American or one woman on the Supreme Court does not diversity make. But I think, as someone said, it's obvious she's a woman. How much should she play that? And she wants to be the first woman president. And so how does she play being the first woman nominee of a major political party? She wants to be the first president. That will be the ultimate glass ceiling.
They're doing weekend update segments following the convention from Saturday Night Live. Last night, they played back that glass breakage effect. And Colin Jost made a very millennial comment about that. He said, "That's a very 1980s video effect." I mean, that's a millennial talking about the effect, not about the technical aspect of it. Did that work for millennials? Ayesha, did that work for the Sanders supporters, seeing that glass ceiling break, or was that just a video effect from 1983?
I'll put it to you this way. I did not support President Obama because he was African-American, even though I am African-American. I thought he was the best person for the job. So it's really great that President Obama talked about her being the most qualified person, because I think millennials want the most qualified person. So although they appreciate all the barriers being broken down, some of them kind of don't remember that they really existed and haven't quite experienced them. If you've just come out of college, perhaps you haven't experienced sexism to the same extent as others, and they don't recognize it in the same way. So I think the issues and her qualifications are going to be what really push them forward.
It's been
Mike, in the hall, there was a lot of jubilation and a lot of women, I think, maybe a little older women, had a personal moment with that. And I think on TV, the message they wanted to give was to maybe women out there who are undecided, maybe moderate Republican women in the suburbs who really are turned off a lot by Donald Trump, but they just aren't sold yet on Hillary Clinton. And I think, you know, this may have been a way to say, you know, this is a historic moment and take another look at her. And I think it was pretty effective on that level, actually.
Bill Clinton spoke on Tuesday night. It was kind of a two-part speech. "I met this girl," started it off, which was kind of a very personal and a little strange for a political convention, a personal journey through their personal relationship. And then it became like a cheerleader for his wife and her accomplishments. Where do you rank that speech among some of the other speeches? Because he's a master communicator that he has given. Where do you rank that speech?
I thought it was pretty effective in terms of the humanization of his wife, and saying, you know, there is more than just what you see. And I think a lot of what we're seeing this week is that attempt to give a broader picture.
But he never addressed the elephant in the room, Monica Lewinsky.
And you saw him go from 1971 kind of all the way up to the 1980s, and then you kind of get to his presidential run. That whole period of the late 1990s, we just going to skip, and just kind of went right into her Senate run in 2000 and beyond. So, you know, that everybody knew it.
Right.
Everybody understood it. And I didn't think it needed to be addressed, but it was very much that humanization
aspect.
Well,
you will see it. If you didn't see it at the Democratic National.
That would have been the lead in the paper the next
day. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Right. Bill Clinton finally fessed up about that. He wanted that, although it was sort of an obvious, you know, omission, I guess.
It may have been an omission at the convention, but Donald Trump has promised the American people that it is going to be an issue that he exploits. And what is he going to say?
How can somebody who's been married three times exploit that?
Well, I know. There was no mention so much of family at the Republican convention, and there's a reason. You can't be thrice married and refer to my family over time. And I think I'm nothing away from blended families, but to really say the family card with people that look askance and they say, well, you know, he may be an art, he may have the art of the deal, but how does that extend to compassion and mothers and fathers? But it will be used. There was an article in the New York Times, what I thought was, this is curious, about what will Bill do if Hillary is elected with his spare time? And he can redefine the role of first lady to first gentleman, and I don't think it'll be just, you know, fooling around.
Yeah. I think one thing Trump did well last week was he put his children up there on the stage, and they were well-spoken, I think better than him, perhaps. And I think tonight we'll see Chelsea Clinton play that same role in introducing, I believe, her mother and talking about that personal side. And people might say, look, they raised her pretty good. And they're in Donald Trump, I think, you know, they could say they raised those kids pretty well.
New Jersey,
and I think that's the kind of message that comes across, too.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker gave a rousing "We Will Rise" speech. I think it was Tuesday night or when. I can't remember what night it was. Now, it sounded more like the keynote address than Senator Elizabeth Warren's keynote address. And most conventions that I can remember have a moment where someone emerges. Was this Cory Booker's moment?
It could have been. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike. Tim.
Well, in 2004, of course, an Illinois state senator named Barack Obama emerged. I think Elizabeth Warren has emerged before. I think Cory Booker and some others were on the short list for the vice president. So I think this was their effort to say, hey, look at me. Down the road, I might be coming back to ask for your vote and getting some national exposure there.
Democrats and more than a few columnists and political pundits and editorial writers have said that most of what Donald Trump and other Republicans at their convention said was devoid of fact. But facts don't seem to matter in this election cycle, and only perceptions, only personal belief matters. If I believe it, then it's true, and that doesn't. And what the facts are completely irrelevant. Given that, can spelling out the facts on crime being down, not up, on the economy drastically improving during President Obama's term, on a tempered adult approach to dealing with foreign powers, can those things win in this white, hot, angry, facts be damned political environment?
Well, not with Donald Trump. I mean, he said one time in a speech, he said, I read it in a book, and the person that helped him with the art of the deal said, his attention span is so short. I don't think it matters. I think the people that support Donald Trump can say back, he tells it like it is.
But what does this say about us?
Well, it doesn't say much about many people in the electorate and attention to detail and looking for the plan. It's a politics of personality, and it's been said before, but it's reality TV.
And it speaks to us as being basically baked into our partisan viewpoints. I mean, you have to remember that there are different audiences that these politicians are trying to talk to. There's their base. They are committed. They will vote for that particular candidate.
But they have to get the people in the middle. They have to.
But if you can increase the base numbers who show up, which Barack Obama did in 2008 in this state, this state was 13% for George W. Bush in terms of margin of victory. Barack Obama focused on the ground, got those Democrats out that would not have typically shown up, and he flipped this state to a less than half a percentage point victory for the Democrats. So you've got that. You've got those folks in the middle that are probably listening and trying to figure out who's right, who's wrong, and probably going, you know what? Both of them are just not you know, ideal. And then you've got the opposition that no way on God's green earth will they ever think about voting for a Democrat or a Republican. And so the system is just basically baked in, and we are the problem.
The Republican platform is among the most conservative in recent memory. It embraces traditional views of family, barring women from combat, calling coal a clean energy source, encouraging the teaching of the Bible in public schools, because it's good for educational aspects. It disapproves of homosexuality, same-sex marriage, transgender rights, despite the fact that these things really don't line up with their nominees' expressed beliefs and opinions. Mm-hmm. But the Democratic platform, on the other hand, is the most progressive in recent history. It advocates taking sensible action to address gun violence, goes up against the gun lobby. The prevention and treatment of drug use over incarceration. It advocates a woman's right to choose and safe legal abortion. It pushes for more work to support LGBT people. It reverses course on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, those TPP signs that you've been seeing in the convention hall. And they say that cost should never be a barrier to a college education, and they want to improve access to health care, something they've already done. So do parties usually follow through on these platforms? Do candidates campaign on the platforms? Which of these platform approaches do you believe is going to be the most attractive to the largest number of voters needed to win this election?
I think in most cases, the party nominees don't mention and don't even bring up the platforms. I actually think the platform here in Philadelphia is more of a Bernie Sanders platform. It's to the left of Hillary Clinton, just like the one in Cleveland was to the right of Donald Trump. I don't think you'll hear much about them. I think they were used to help, you know, help those who didn't win feel like they were part of the party. And you know what strikes me is how different these two conventions are and these two parties are. It's like being on different planets. Now, I didn't go to Cleveland, but I watched it. But up here, it's the delegations are much more diverse. I think, and it's just not a difference just in political views. It's almost different culture, different social views, different religious views. Meryl Streep versus Scott Baio, reality TV versus hip hop. I mean, it's like being on a different planet.
And different outlooks of what America is and the condition that it's in today.
Exactly.
Reflecting two different Americas, yeah.
The parties have sorted themselves. And so you've got like-minded individuals that only care about certain things in one party, and you've got a totally different viewpoint in the other party. And that's where, you know, the party platforms are basically speaking to the grassroots activist. I dare say if any average voter goes out and tries to read the party platforms, I would be shocked. But the candidates are going to take the lead, and their positions are going to be the ones that are going to really be focused on.
Aisha.
Well, I would say that the difference this time, and I think that this really happened in 08 also, a lot of the young people and millennials are actually reading and they're concerned about the issue. So I would slightly disagree there. And I would say for a lot of the Bernie supporters, because we pulled in people who had not participated in the process, that's where the opportunity lies for us.
Last night was a big night for the Democrats. It was, they brought out all the stars. They brought out Leon Panetta. They brought out Vice President Biden, who is beloved in the Democratic Party. They brought out, obviously, the new nominee for Vice President, whose name escapes me at the moment,
Tim Kaine.
And nobody really knows Tim Kaine unless you're from Virginia. They brought out, obviously, Barack Obama last night, who is also beloved by Democrats, and who just, I mean, Michael Beschloss, who is a presidential historian, described it as a flawless night and the strongest endorsement for an outgoing president for a nominee in history. And we haven't seen before many opportunities for outgoing two-term presidents to embrace the incoming nominee, and that happened last night. It was a surprise. It was not a surprise to me. I knew she was coming out.
Yeah,
To happen. Yeah. But it was a surprise to a lot of people that she came out and embraced it. And it looked absolutely genuine. What does she have to say tonight to not only top all the speakers that came last night, but to bring in people who are on the sidelines?
Well, I think what people have been asking, how do you reintroduce someone who's been on the public stage, in the public awareness for so long? And I think what is going to happen, people were asking the question, how can she present herself as the candidate of change? I think, very effectively, she is presenting herself as the candidate of going forward. She doesn't have to change, but, you know, Michelle Obama said, America is great. We don't have to make it great. And I think she's going, she really doesn't have a lot to think, I am going to be the speech, I'm going to give the speech. I think she just has to really reiterate what people have said about her, but how she can deliver. Delivery is a big part of it.
The president has said several times, America is always great. And he touted all of the list of things that went from being really bad 8 years ago because of the recession to really good today. Yet the Republican Party painted a very bleak picture of America. I understand, I don't know this for a fact, but I understand that the party that paints the most favorable picture, the most optimistic outlook, is the party that generally wins. Is that the case? And if that's the case, is this a shoo-in?
The speeches of the nominees, if it is more positive and forward-looking and kind of inspirational, those candidates tend to be the ones that ultimately win in November. But there's a lot of people that think that the country is still on the wrong track. Mm-hmm. You got 2/3 to 3/4 of people saying, you know, this is not the country that I expect it to be. And that's going to be, I think, for both camps, the big issue.
I think the most effective thing that President Obama did is that, look, we are a changing country, but he talked about his Kansas grandparents. He says the values inside are what are important, not, you know, we can bring in new people, new immigrants, and blend their cultures and grow as America. I think what she needs to do tonight is acknowledge that this is history. She's the first woman, but she needs to move on and say, I'm going to take it to ISIS. I'm going to help you with your... You get jobs and things like that.
And you get the last word, because that's all the time we have, Tim Funk. Of course, most of this convention was not seen on television unless you watch the cable network, so we'll see what they took away from this at the end of the election cycle, I suppose. Dr. Michael Bitzer, Dr. Susan Roberts, Tim Funk, and Aisha Du. Thank you.